Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome back to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and after a very nice long winter break, I am so excited to be back and recording live at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I have moved radio spots from Monday to Thursday, so you can listen to the show every Thursday at 11 a.m. and download the podcast on iTunes or stream live from heritageradionetwork.org. This year, I am honored to kick off the season with one of the most creative and motivated and just all-around awesome people that I know, illustrator, designer, and author Julia Rothman. Thanks for being here, Julia.
That's a nice introduction. Thank you.
So for those people who aren't familiar with your work, I just wanted to introduce it a little bit. So in addition to having all of your incredible illustrations printed in publications like Details and New York Magazine, Food and Wine, and the New York Times, you've also designed patterns and products for companies like Crate and Barrel and Anthropology, and you've done work for Target, and you've also written four of your own books, and you've been involved in, I'm just going to say it, like 15 books that are written on Amazon, a lot of which are journals and awesome pattern things, but you've got a lot of books under your belt. So we're going to talk about everything today. But first, I want to start with the beginning. You grew up in City Island. Talk about how that sort of shaped how you ended up doing the work you do now. For me, New York is like a huge part of what you do.
City Island's a weird place for people who don't know what it is. It's a small island in the top of the Bronx. It's a mile and a half long and half a mile wide. And I always say it's like a small town because everybody knows everybody. Actually, the guy who runs the gas station is called David Carman. I mean, his last name is Carman. So it's like that kind of town. But then it's only a 20-minute car ride to New York City, like the middle of New York City, Manhattan. So, yeah, I grew up staying on the island, but also taking little trips to Manhattan in high school, jumping on the subway with my friends and going downtown.
Were you spending time in New York City, like, in the obvious places, like museums and galleries, or were you more inspired as a kid by things that were a little
more St. Mark's Place when I was in high school, going to all the weird stores and walking up and down and eating at weird, cheap places and pretending we were NYU students.
That's a classic young New Yorker thing.
Yeah.
So when you were young, were you drawing? Were you illustrating things already?
Yeah, I was drawing always. I can't remember when I wasn't drawing, but it wasn't that serious in the beginning. Even in high school, I didn't take a lot of art classes. I wasn't even in art in high school until senior year. So I was more into doing dancing, and I wanted to be a ballerina, which didn't work out because I don't have the body for it at all or anything. But that was sort of the big dream, and then this was like the second dream and the more realistic dream, which people would say art isn't a very realistic dream, but for me... I guess it was always the commercial side of it. So, yeah.
Did you think about the commercial side at a young age, though? Were you thinking about that? Or were you mostly thinking about, like, the creative part of it?
No, I definitely liked the idea of doing posters or seeing things in books or drawings that came on bedding. And I never really thought of myself as the kind of artist that would be in a gallery, even though people would say, oh, one day you're going to be an artist in a gallery. And I'd be like, yeah. But that didn't happen anyway, so...
That's kind of great. I don't feel like any artists really think that way when they start out. I feel like everything's about being in a gallery or a museum or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, so. It's probably, I guess, a better way to be a moneymaker in the world.
So how did that transition happen from giving up the ballerina dream to embracing art? How did you decide if you were going to go to art school and where you went to art school?
So senior year in high school, I did... decide to do art, and I got into the AP art program, and then it was time to apply to college, and I was a good student, but I wasn't like an Ivy Leaguer, and all my friends were Ivy Leaguers, and I wanted to be awesome, so I was like, what's the best art school I could go to? And everyone was like, RISD or Cooper Union.
Yeah.
But so once I saw the application for Cooper Union, I was like, forget it, and then I applied to RISD just on a whim and applied to a bunch of other schools. And then when I got into RISD, I was like, oh, I can really do this. So that's when I decided, okay, go for it. Do it. Yeah. This is going to be your life.
I love how motivated you were at a young age. How did your work evolve in college? I mean, I have to say, from an outside perspective, I've heard from people who are current RISD students who say that you're kind of like a legend in the illustration department. Yes, people say that, Juliet. They do. And how do you feel like your work evolved? Do you feel like you kind of like it clicked and you got your style like really early on?
I don't know. No, probably not. I think in the beginning I was doing all kinds of different things. I think junior year, probably when I did an independent study with Robert Brinkerhoff was when I like really put the style together and started doing line drawings and then painting with gouache and making that my style. And then I continued doing that. But then when I graduated, I was doing something totally different, which was this flat vector art, which I learned at an internship I did at City Magazine. So then I was doing both of these two styles at once. And then I finally was able to give up that other style.
And go straight for the vectors?
No, the other way. Go
but
straight
you did
for the
some vector work, right?
Didn't I did a lot, but then yeah. I was not happy about it because it was very digital and didn't feel like what I really wanted to do, which was like drawing by hand.
And you found a really interesting way to combine those two things now, because now you're doing pattern work that you're starting on paper, right? And then
right.
do you translate that into something that becomes vector work?
So vector, when I say vector work, I guess I mean drawing straight into the computer with the pen tool. So it's like shapes. How do you describe it? Almost like cut paper piling of shapes. But now it's like I'm hand drawing all the drawings, scanning them in, and only coloring them in the computer, and sometimes coloring them by hand too. I mean,
oh,
the
wow.
computer is very much part of what I do, yeah. but at least the first part is by hand.
Do you prefer that? Like, what's your sort of preferred method to create?
I think it always looks nicer when it's handmade and it's more fun to do.
Yeah, I think people associate that with your work, because that sort of like hand-drawn quality that you've got, even in the stuff that becomes like giant print ads that feels very kind of computer-made, you can tell that you've drawn it with your hands.
Well, good. Thanks.
So let's talk about how you moved into pattern work. That's when I first met you, when you were starting to work on patterns and you were doing Surtex. Talk a little bit about how you made that transition from drawing in school and doing sort of like spot editorial work into something bigger and repeated.
I guess it all came from doing work for the company Hasbro, the big toy company. I was doing style guides for this girl who's become my friend, Jess Rosencrantz, and she hired me to draw. She saw my work and saw my illustration work and said, hired me to draw patterns, and she was like, you can do this. It's in your illustration style, but just make them repeat. And I was like, okay. You know, like I'll press repeat in the computer, like copy, paste, copy, paste, copy, paste.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I learned how to make a pattern. And so I started making patterns for My Little Pony and Littlest
Pet
Shop.
Did you just teach yourself how to do that then?
Yeah, totally.
Wow.
But I mean, it's really not that hard when you know how to use Illustrator that you can copy and paste, and then
yeah.
it's sort of like just arranging the things that you're using, the elements, and then copy and pasting. So then I started doing that, and then she was like, hey, you should check out Surtex to get new ideas. And so I went with Jess to Surtex, and we walked around, and I was like, all these people are making patterns how they want, and I could do this. Like, why am I not doing this? Look, they're making tons of money, and their things are going all over the place.
I doubt anybody at Surtex feels like they're making tons of money.
No, that's what
patterns.
You think when you're walking around. So I decided next year, the following year, I was going to make 100 patterns and do this show and make, you know, sell them for $500 each and lose the rights. And, you know, but I'd get this $500 for each pattern and make a lot of money. Selling all of them, you know.
So what? How did that Surtex go? Was it everything you dreamed?
I sold 8 patterns, I think. But I wound up making a lot of contacts. But I realized selling your designs outright was not the way to go. It was like a big, big learning experience. But I met you in person for the first time, so that was a big deal.
It was great. I mean, I honestly feel like as someone who's been watching pattern design for a long time, like at this point, I feel like your work really ushered in this era of like hand-drawn patterns that are everywhere now. And I had been to Surtex for years before that. And to see your booth, I mean, I will never forget like the image of you sitting in this booth. And even the thing that you chose in your booth design, which is something that like pattern designers should think about. You blew up the images like so huge on the back of the wall. And it was like this explosion of color and pattern. And everybody else's booth, they have these flat notebooks that you can flip through. And it's a very different experience. And I felt like walking by, you instantly got who you were, what your style was, like what your color palette was. And now Surtex is starting to feel like that's a bit more common. But I feel like you really like should get some credit for ushering in that era. You really you. Did.
Thanks. That's nice. I think it was more a naive, not knowing what I was doing kind of thing and thinking what would look the best. And I remember talking to Jenny about that. I'm like, I only have a few weeks and I have to make this booth look good. And she's like, just print it really, really big. That's it. Like, just print the pattern to huge. And I was like, yeah.
So Jenny, for people who don't know, Jenny Wawalski is one of your partners and also along with Matt Lamoth.
Lamoth, right? Yes.
You have a lot of Matts in your life, and I always get all their last names confused. Talk a little bit about also, because that's been like a huge like jumping off pad for a lot of different projects you've done. How did that group come about, and how do you guys work together?
So after college, I had to make a website for myself, and I didn't really know how. And I sort of hired, I gave her a little bit of money. I'd say hired, but my friend Jenny from school was a graphic design major and she knew how to do web design. So I was like, can you help me get this site up online? And so she did that for me. And then I had another client who was like, hey, do you make websites? And Jenny, and I was like, oh, Jenny knows how to make them. Maybe we'll all three work together.
Yeah.
And that sort of started this thing where we made websites together and then eventually decided to form a company. And
how'd you come up with the name also?
That was Jenny, I think. I remember actually her, we were walking back to my apartment in Brooklyn. I was living in Fort Greene at the time, and we were walking down the sidewalk, and she's like, so this company we might start, you know, the three of us, yay, I have the perfect name. Also, we also do this, and we also do that. And I was like, that's it, perfect. So, yeah.
It kind of encapsulates it all, and you guys have done some really incredible work together. We're going to take a quick break, and then I want to start talking about the projects you've done with also.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Washed rind cheeses are a fairly recent addition to the repertoires of artisanal cheesemakers in the United States. These cheeses tend to be stinkier than other types and are often high on the list of connoisseurs. Now, Whole Foods Market has come up with one of their own. The raw cow's milk cheese, made by Sprout Creek Farm in Poughkeepsie, New York, is washed with 6-point ale from Red Hook, Brooklyn. The beige sticky rind deepens in color as it ages. The satiny ivory cheese within is mellow, with a sweetly tangy bite and a grassy aroma. The current version features 6-point diesel, which is in limited supply, so stop by and pick up some before it's gone. And point-of-origin cheese is sold exclusively at Whole Foods Market in New York, northern New Jersey, and Connecticut. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
welcome back to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today, for the first episode of 2013 season, I'm talking with illustrator, author, and designer Julia Rothman. So before the break, we were talking about the creation of your sort of design triad, called also, of Jenny Vivalsky, Matt Lamoth, and Julia Rothman. And they're based in Chicago, but you're based in New York. How have you guys made that work in terms of running a sort of a company together, but not living in the same city?
So Jenny is on my desktop all day in this little screen off to the side in iChat. So we're on video phone the entire day. But most of the time we're not talking and we're just listening to music together and working as if we're in a studio together. And then we just send each other stuff. I just drag files onto her face, basically, and they pop up on her screen and she looks at them and then we talk about them. And it's been back and forth like that. And it's been for, I think, over 8 years that we've been doing this. So it's worked out just great, actually.
Yeah. I love that you do. I think a lot of people who are sort of want to be in your position of being able to do all these different types of creative projects, from the outside, it seems to me like that's been a grounding force for you. Like, you can come back to these two people who know you really well, who know your style really well, and you guys kind of gel on projects that you want to do together. And I love that you make it work, even though you guys don't live and work in the same place. Mm-hmm. So it seems like iChat has been kind of like the fourth member of your team.
Yeah. if we didn't have that, it would not be possible for us to work together. The other thing is that a lot of the time I'm not working with them directly. Like, Jenny will be doing a website, mm-hmm. and I'll be doing an illustration, and we're separately getting credit for those things. But at the same time, like, Jenny and Matt are giving me so much input into every single thing I do. They see everything I do and make great criticism on it and help me make it better. And I hope I'm doing the same for them with stuff. So,
yeah. I think that sort of feedback has been really crucial for you, and it's been interesting to watch as a fan of your work from the outside as well, because I think that sort of fed into other things you've done. One of the things I'm really interested to talk about is you sort of have this drawing group you've done with Leah Gorin and some other artists.
Rachel Cole.
And Rachel. And I think you've launched a line of painted silk scarves, which are beautiful, but it started as sort of a outside of work drawing group, right?
Yeah, we just decided one day a week to get together and just work on things that we wanted to do for ourselves, sort of self-driven projects,
yeah,
instead of doing works for clients. So Leah actually was my sort of assistant or intern for a year and just is so incredible and just graduated and already is, you know, having a line in anthropology and doing so well. And so she's become like a contemporary or friend,
yeah,
you know, and I wanted to, when she was working for me, it was really fun and
yeah,
we had a good time together. So I wanted to continue that. And then I had met Rachel Cole at this conference, illustration conference Icon, and she was another person I really connected with. And so I sort of brought those two together and we have this little threesome. We are getting together once a week. Sometimes we go to a plate painting
yeah,
place and just make stuff. I mean, we're doing all kinds of things.
I think that's great. How crucial has that sort of like real world connection with other artists been to sort of keep you going?
It's important. And actually, I just got a new studio space with other people too. But I think that I am working at home and I am talking to Jenny, but she's not actually there.
Yeah.
And when you want to go to lunch, you're going to lunch alone. And I don't know. It's just, you do need people around you, or I do.
Yeah.
And I am 100% extrovert. I learned from taking a personality test online. So I think that doing collaborative projects with people has come out of really wanting to be around other people, like physically.
Yeah. No, it's a huge part of it. If you're somebody who's independent, whether you're running a business or an illustrator or whatever it is, like actually interacting with human beings is a huge crucial part of that. And like one of the huge underlying themes of After the Jump's first season last year was talking about the importance of like personal connections outside of like the quote unquote connections you have with people on the internet. So that's a huge challenge I think we all share. What are like other challenges you've really kind of had to deal with over the last couple of years? Because you've had this sort of like monumental growth of your business or your brand, if you want to call it that. And what are the sort of big hurdles you've faced so far?
Probably the biggest thing is knowing what to charge people and charging them.
Yeah.
I know that it's like when you get to a point where you're working for the really big companies, like doing a pattern for Victoria's Secret, working for Crate and Barrel, you know, and they're asking you for a budget or Target, doing all those huge billboards for Target, they're like, give me a price. And I'm like, I have no idea. Zero idea.
Yeah.
And you just sort of have to think about it and come up with something. And that's something that a lot of people use an agent for. And I've sort of wanted to do things on my own. So I've had to figure that out. And that was a big, scary thing.
I think that's kind of inspirational, though. I mean, I sort of admire and share the idea of kind of like flying by the seat of your pants. That's how I've always kind of run my business. And I love that that's sort of, I mean, from the second we sat down and started talking today, that's been sort of what you've been doing the whole time. You've thought you wanted to do something and you just found a way to do it and you did it on your own. Do you love that? Does that inspire you? Or do you think at some point you want to find a way to not have to do everything on your own? Or does that kind of keep you going?
I want to do everything on my own forever.
Yeah. Forever.
I just want to figure out ways to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
It's like, you're going to die, so do what you want to do, you know? It's like, I mean, there's so many people who are like, oh, I wish I was going to freelance, or I wish I could do this project. That. Yeah. And it's like, so do it. Find a way to do it. And, I mean, now is a better time than ever.
It's true. Well, I think that sort of can-do spirit is something that, like, set you apart from other people. And that's something that I think other designers can learn from in terms of looking at like how you take a career from an idea or a dream or this goal that you have into something that's a reality. Because when I first met you, this was something that you were kind of dreaming of doing. And now I feel like you've gone to just doing all these big projects overnight. And I don't even know if you've like paused stuff and think about like how far you've come in that time period.
It's huge. Much more to do, Grace.
There is. All right. Well, what's next? Tell me what else you're working on right now. I know you've done what feels like 9 million books. I want to talk a little bit about how did the whole book thing happen? From the outside, it looks like you just come up with a book idea and then you just make it and it gets done. But for people who are dreaming of doing their own books, how did you get that whole process started?
Well, I have or had what will be restarting a blog about books, which was sort of, it's called Book by Its Cover. And it was sort of just a sharing of the books I own and liked, and then publishers started sending me books and saying, hey, look at this, do you like it, put it up.
Yeah.
And then it sort of grew and grew into this thing, and from there I guess I got contacts to publishers, and I wanted to do this project where readers could sort of tell a story in the blog and everybody could keep adding on, based on the Exquisite Corpse game.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone said to me, well, it doesn't really sound like a good project for a blog. Why don't you just make it into a book? And I was like, okay, yes, that's true. I'm going to do that. And we happened to get a meeting with Chronicle Books, and I just went off and pitched them this idea.
Yeah.
And was just, and it's going to be like this, and we're going to get these people, and David Trigley is going to be in it.
Did you have any of those people secured when you pitched it? Or did you just
I just said, these are the people I want in the book. Chris Ware, you know?
Like, yeah.
And they said, that sounds, I mean, they didn't say it initially, but they were like, okay, we're interested.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks later, I got a call and they're like, we're really interested.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I was online to get my wedding license when Bridget, the editor at Chronicle Books, called me to say it was a go. And I feel like I didn't know which thing I was more excited about. I mean, no offense to my husband or anything, but like, I was going to get my own book, and I was getting married, but I was going to have my own book.
Equally important and exciting life moments to have.
At once.
So. I think that's really great. And you're working on some new books. Tell us about the newest project you have coming up.
Right now, I'm going to do a book about New York City. Since I was born and raised here and feel like I know a lot, I wanted to share the best places to go, funny stories that happened in New York, people I know, just a book about New York. It's called Hello, New York.
I'm particularly excited about the stories portion of that, because I have a feeling your head is full of really interesting stories from growing up here.
We'll see. It's very personal. It's hard. It took me a really long time to write it. And actually, the book even got pushed a season because I couldn't finish or keep up with it, because it was like really hard to work on, because like, should I put this in? This is a personal story of something that happened to me. And are people going to think it's funny, or are they going to think it's stupid? Or
yeah.
And a lot of the other books I work on are collaborations where other people are putting their stuff out there, or it's somebody's sketchbooks, or, you know. But this is my life, so it's been tricky.
I think it's interesting that, well, you just most recently you did a book on farm anatomy where you talked a lot about sort of the relationship between farms and your husband, Matt, who grew up on one in Iowa. And so talk a little bit about that project, because that was your first foray into something that was, for me, felt like a very intensely personal book, especially the introduction to it.
Yeah, I think the introduction, I think the book wasn't personal at all, except that I had to find a way to show that there was a reason for me doing this book. Mm-hmm. And that was like to connect to my husband's roots. And he grew up on a farm in Iowa, in Taber, Iowa, which is a really tiny place. And he you know, I remember going there and there's all these buildings, like land with all these like barns and things. I was like, what is in all these different buildings? Like, this is so interesting. And I sort of got a good feeling about it. And there was all this talk about being green and other things, and Story really wanted to do a book that was about all these different things, and so we just came together and they let me do what I wanted with that book, which was awesome.
I think that's fantastic, and it turned out, I think, whether or not you think that the farm stuff ended up being personal, I feel like that came through in the illustrations, because I think everything had this like very loving sort of vibe to it of things that you really thought about because of that. So that's why I'm really excited that you're doing more work like that. And in general, I get really excited when designers do things that kind of start to become more personal, whether it's as intimate as sharing their home on a site or talking about something that they grew up with, because you really kind of get a peek into like what made them who they are. And I think knowing you as an artist and as a person, I think New York is like so sewn into the fabric of who you are that it's impossible to separate those two things. So I think this has got to be like the biggest challenge for you.
Yeah.
To put something so personal out there like that.
Yeah. I think when it's good and personal, it's number one.
Yeah.
So
I want to bring this back around since we're almost out of time, but I love, since you're working on something about New York, and I constantly imagine you like as a little kid growing up in City Island, not knowing all this big stuff was going to happen to you when you got older. What advice would you give yourself, young artist Julia Rothman, now that you're more established artist Julia Rothman, looking back? Would you tell yourself to stop dancing and start drawing more?
Yes. I would have said to stop caring about what other people think. I think that's something that I'm slowly trying to get over still. I have a hard time hearing negative feedback, comments. Like, I'll get like 100 nice comments and then there'll be one mean one and I'll cry like for 3 days. Oh, no. You know, it's like things like that where I have to stop. Just being more confident in myself, I think.
I think that's good advice for everyone going forward. And I'll have to say, as a fan of your work and as a fan of you as a person, I think you're someone who actually does a really good job of not caring what people think. You've really like plowed forward with your career with like this reckless, passionate abandon to just kind of like make things happen when you want to make them happen. And it's super endlessly inspiring. So thank you for all the great work you do. And I think everyone listening to this and watching your work has always been inspired by that sort of enthusiasm to just make it work and figure out the details later.
Thanks.
So keep up the great work. And everybody, you can check out Julia Rothman more on her website at juliarothman.com. And you can check out her new book coming out next year in 2014. And it's going to be called Hello, New York. So thanks for being with us, Julia.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.